Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Legend of Takhti.
He was the best wrestler in Iranian history.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service.
Rumors spread that
he had been killed.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor'ı dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tumia Ektay, The Fifth Floor, Farnak Amidi Sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Can I have a flat white, please?
Flat white, yes.
When I get into work, I always stop at the BBC Cafe and order my favourite coffee. It's just a nice way to kickstart my day and have a small chat with Anya, the barista that prepares my morning fuel.
Is it a busy day today? Always busy.
It's warm and comforting. But could a humble cup of coffee hold a deeper, more powerful meaning? The answer is yes, if you live in Ukraine. In recent months, several so-called memory cafes have opened up across the country. They're run by relatives of soldiers who died in the war. My colleague, Ilona Khramluk, from BBC Ukrainian, has been talking to three women who opened cafes in memory of their loved ones.
This cafe, it's kind of like unusual monument for the fallen soldier. In most of them, you will see the pictures of fallen soldiers. And I understood that people, when they know that this cafe exists, they can go there and they can buy coffee and say thank you in such a way.
So it's a way to pay tribute to the fallen soldiers.
Yeah. In Ukraine, we have casualties because of the war, like every day. And there are a lot of public groups that want to remember the soldiers. And I found out that one cafe was open in Lviv. And then another cafe, like the similar one, was open up in another town. Now I counted at least five of such places in Ukraine, and I think the amount will grow.
So, Ilona, from what I understand, these women, none of them used to be cafe owners or restaurateurs before. Why did they choose to do cafes?
From what I understand, speaking to them, that a lot of families in Ukraine just dreamed to have some family cafes. And all of them had their relatives on the front. And there is such thing, when you talk to your relatives on the front, when they do some dangerous thing, you want to support them somehow. And I know it from many of my friends, that they're talking, for example, to their relatives and say, like, after war, like, we will go abroad or we'll do this and that. And we have to make our cafe. You remember, we wanted it before the war. And this woman told me that it was the same story in their life. That they support their husband in such way, like they began to talk about their future plans, and they told me that after their death, they feel like obliged to fulfill that dream.
That's so emotional. You know, when I was like reading the article, it's just so emotional and also so sad that these women, you know, this is all they can do, and their dreams were cut short. So unexpectedly. Where do these women find the resources to open these cafes and businesses?
If your relative dies on the front, the state pays you a compensation. It's 15 million Ukrainian hryvnias, and in dollars it's 380,000.
That's quite a lot of money.
That's a lot. Yes, that's like, when I first heard it, I was just like, check it three times because I couldn't believe it. Just for you to understand, so like regular salary, it's maybe like $300 or $400. And for 15 million hryvnias, you can buy three very good apartments in Kyiv. Like, so it's a lot of money. Yeah, but it's for whole family because a lot of families, they had just one man who worked for the whole family or something like this. So in such way, the state compensate the loss of member of the family. Some women established the cafe with this money. And another one, for example, Victoria, she got a grant from the local Lviv authority.
And let's talk about Victoria and her Coffee for Two Cafe. So, what's her story and where did the name come from?
So she lost her husband. He was like 50 years old. He was very passionate, patriotic. He was volunteering. And he died in Bakhmut, where actually like 1,000 Ukrainian men died. And she told me a lot about their relationship. She said that she met this man when she had 40 years. She had already had a child. And it was kind of special relationship. She said, I didn't know even that such respect could be present in relationship. And she said that she wanted to have like more evenings with coffee with her husband, but she didn't have it. And she said, I wanted to give somebody something that I will never have again. Yeah, it's so sad.
It's so emotional. It must have been very emotional for you as well to, sit and talk to these women and listen to their stories. And from what I understand, her son is right now in the front line as well.
Her son was 18 years old and he went to the war and she was so like, what should she do? But she is from Kherson. This is near Crimea. And when her son was occupied, her son told her that granddad and grandma still lived in Kherson. She said, I want to free my grandparents. He's currently at the front line as well.
So working at the cafe and running her business probably helps her, keep her mind busy a little.
Yeah, she told me that in the beginning it was very hard. And just for you to understand, here in Lviv, we have many funerals. And at once, I was a witness of such a ceremony. It was a shock for me because, I was just drinking coffee in the city center. Lviv is a kind of European style city. So this like little houses, everything is so colorful and music is everywhere. And then everything is silenced. It was so emotional, it was no sound at all. And Victoria told me that she was crying when she saw funerals again in Lviv. But then she told me that like step by step, she had the understanding of what this cafe should look like. And she said that when you put so much time and money into this project, you just cannot stop. She had so many situations, like for example, something was broken and so on. And she was very focused on everyday things. And that's how it helped her to go through all this.
It's really a story of resilience. So the next woman called Irina, she also has a cafe. Tell me about her and her story.
This is very young woman. She's in her 20s and she established a cafe with a very interesting name. It's called Zhenich. It's like fiance in English. It's not a Ukrainian word. It's kind of Russian word. But the Ukrainians Ukrainize this word. So it's kind of like mixed language. We have such language sometimes in small towns. For example, they mix words, Russian and Ukrainian. And when people see that cafe named Zhenich, they think that maybe she doesn't know Ukrainian language well. But the matter is that Zhenich was a nickname of her husband, at that time boyfriend. And when he had a day off from the front, the military bosses ask him, like, why do you need these days off? Like, what's the purpose? And he told them that he is going to marry her and he's going to be Zhenikh, this fiance. That's how he obtained his nickname. Actually, it's so sad because at that day, when they got married, it was the last day they saw each other.
It's really, really moving.
So sad.
So you also spoke to the mother of a soldier, a 26-year-old soldier who died in 2022, and her name is Olena. She opened a cafe in Kharkiv to remember her son, and from what I understand, this cafe is very different from the rest of the cafes. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so she told me that she is a lawyer, and her son was studied as a lawyer as well, but he loved to work at cafes. He liked to make cocktails, and he dreamt about to have a cafe, to have his family cafe. Then she felt that he have to fulfill his son's dream about cafe. And it's like very military style. So inside there are some pictures of the fallen soldiers, and she even said that there are already some pictures of soldiers who came into this cafe for coffee, and now they have it on the wall because they died after they established the cafe. And also interesting thing that there is messages that these people send to their loved ones. There was some message from the son of Olena. He wrote to his grandma. His grandma, with the beginning of the war, moved to Germany, and it was her birthday, and he told her that he wished that one day she will return to Kharkiv without fear of war, without risks, and he, meanwhile, will do everything for the victory. Mm.
It must be very difficult for Olena to, you know, be in that space with all of these photos and messages around her.
Yes, I ask her the same because for me it's like kind of like triggering maybe.
Yeah.
And she told me that it's hard to live, not to watch messages, like that she needs to watch these messages because it was the only child that she had.
Mm.
Yeah, this place is very different from the previous two ones because it's not a business, it's kind of like memory, and they do a lot of donation to the soldiers and so on. And this is the place where the people who lost their relatives can come.
And obviously, you know, these women are dealing with some devastating loss, you know, the death of their husbands, their sons. Did they tell you that running these cafes helps them with their grief a little?
Yeah, it helps them because they have something that occupies their mind, you know. It helps them to live. If you ask them, like, what coffee their husbands like, they will tell you, like, what special kind and so on. And sometimes they have in menu only this kind of coffee. And for example, the mother who lost her child, she told me that she's bringing this coffee to the cemetery to her son. And she also told me that her main message was that we are drinking coffee because of them, that we have this chance to make a coffee just to relax, just because of them, because some people died for our life to continue.
Thanks to Ilona Khramluk from BBC Ukrainian. You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
911, what is your emergency?
Most towns have a local celebrity.
Who is it that's missing?
It's my dad. He went out into the water.
An eccentric known throughout the community.
Inverness market trader Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Inverness revolved around Kim in a way.
Difference is, the local eccentric from my hometown made international headlines.
The man's son reported he disappeared in treacherous water.
Search and rescue teams thought they had yet another drowning on their hands. Or did they?
The story's not adding up.
He is completely unhinged.
It was violent, it was controlling, it was sadistic.
Dead Man Running, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Farnak Hamidi, and for our next story, let me take you to the island of Membar, off the coast of Zanzibar. Membar is popular with tourists, and no wonder why. The place is the stuff of dreams. An oasis of white beaches, crystal clear waters, and a stunning coral reef that spans over 7 kilometers or 4 miles. In recent years, climate change and unregulated fishing have severely damaged the reef. But thanks to the work of passionate and dedicated local divers, the reef is coming back to life. My colleague Alfred Lastek from BBC Africa has been to the Paradise Island to learn more about how the project has transformed not only the reef, but also the lives of people there.
Coral reefs, they provide an important ecosystem for life underwater. They also protect the coastal areas, protecting the coastline from storms and erosion. They are crucial for income for millions of people who live around the coastlines.
So when did the local community start to notice something was wrong with the reefs?
They started noting the change like a decade ago. Most of the communities, they found out that it was difficult to catch fish near the shores, and they are forced to go very far.
Can you give us some of the key factors that have contributed to the destruction of these reefs?
The destruction is all pushed by climate change, overfishing, and unregulated tourism activities. Most of these communities in Zanzibar depend on the blue economy for their survival, meaning they depend on tourism activities on the ocean, but also depend on fishing. So that involves boats that, you know, go around the reef, and they do damage. For instance, when people or tourists are trying to dive, they dive incorrectly, and that may cause the damage of these reefs. But also fishermen use dynamites and other traditional means of fishing, which in one way or another distract the growth of the corals. So the communities tell their problems to the government, and the government first of all took a step of making the area a conservation area. What is happening now is that communities, along with some foundations, which is African Foundation and beyond, collaborating with the government of Zanzibar, have embraced a conservation project which have managed to restore some of the reef that had been damaged.
So how does this conservation initiative actually work, and what a part do locals play in it?
So the locals play two basic roles in this project. One of the things is that they are trained to be marine rangers who dive into the coral reef nurseries, and also they do the transplant exercise underneath the water. In the other end, they do an outreach in the community. They try to talk with other fishermen on best practices of, you know, fishing, but also they talk to tourism guides on the best ways they can do their tourism without hindering this protected area.
So, Alfred, you said marine rangers. I love that word. And also underwater nurseries. How do they work? What are they?
Marine rangers are people who are trained to conserve the environment underwater. They are divers. Mm. So what the rangers do is that they grow new corals in the nurseries using some of the old broken corals. And then after some period of growth, they do a replant in a house reef where the reef can be independent, and then the marine life continues from that point.
So you spoke to some of these marine rangers. What did they tell you?
So most of these marine rangers, when you talk to them, are very passionate people. And I feel they're very courageous because, you know, going underwater, doing such an amazing work. Most of them says it's something that they do with passion. And it's also something that gives them, you know, their daily income.
And one of the divers you spoke to, her name is Atua.
Nikiziona zile coral, samaki na konokono na mazingira kule baharini.
Tell us about her story.
So Atua Omar is one of the female rangers who dives to restore reef. She's the only one in Zanzibar at the moment, and she was living with the parents at home. and she was jobless. And it's when her mother told her that there is an opportunity to work as a ranger. She was very ready because of her passion of swimming. And also she felt like the right time now to support the family. And members in the community then started saying, you know, like, this is not a job that a woman can do. It's very dangerous to her health, and that brought her some discouragement, but she will always stick to a passion. Eventually, she started working under the water in the nursery, in the reef nurseries, and she now hands her living through this job, and family can eat, and children can go to school, and her family can benefit from.
Mm. And it will also help women find new jobs as well. She'll pave the way for them. Is she being well received right now as a female diver?
Yeah, in fact, when we went to her home place, we found her speaking to other women, and, you know, all women, you know, are like very anxious just to know how she manages. And she always tells them that, you know, this is something that any woman can do, and it's not a job just only men can do. And she's trying to break those barriers around these Zanzibari communities that, you know, women can't do some of these jobs.
Alfred Lastic. You can watch his amazing video on BBC News Africa's YouTube channel. Now, we started the show with some really powerful love stories. So let's end with another story about romance. What is it they say? Love can flourish in the most unlikely of places. Like on opposite sides of a ping pong table, Christiana and Kayode Alabi met while playing table tennis. They are now both representing their country, Nigeria, at the 2024 Paralympics in Paris. BBC Africa Sports' Emmanuel Akindubua went to meet them.
Christiana and Kayode Alabi are Nigerian athletes.
I'm Nigerian number one in my category. I'm also a African number one.
Kayode plays in the men's classes, where he plays with the support of a crush. Christiana plays on the wheelchair.
I find joy doing this sport. Each time I'm playing, I don't have anything to worry about.
Both of them had similar stories. Both of them had polio as children, which affected the use of their legs. So I would start with Kayode, who grew up in Lagos, which is a much more cosmopolitan city. He grew up to discover that he couldn't use his leg. The leg got paralyzed by the polio infection and all that. So growing up, it would count on the support of his friends to carry him on their back to the playground. And then at some point, he fell in love with the table tennis. He watched his friend play table tennis for a long time. And at some point in time, he picked up the courage to hold the bat. And from there on, there was no looking back for him. For Christiana, our story was quite different because she's a woman. She grew up in Delta State. She said she was the only disabled person in our community growing up, and that most times she was left alone while others go to school or go to the farm or go to the church. And this was having a mental impact on her. She was very shy until at some point at the age of 13 or 14, when she moved to visit her sister, and she went to the Stephen Keshi Stadium in Asaba, Delta State, where many athletes come for training. And she saw a lot of disabled people who were involving in all sorts of sports. There were some playing wheelchair basketball. There were some doing the powerlifting. There were some playing para table tennis. And she said she loved the sound of the ping pong, and she loved the table tennis sport. She encouraged herself and she started playing the table tennis, which she found love with. But there was a challenge of who is going to be taking her to training. And that was almost a discouragement for her because there was no one who had the time to take her. But that was where the story got interesting, because after she met Kayode, the story changed from discouragement to encouragement. It was indeed a case of love at first sight for Kayode and Christiana. When Kayode met her, it was at the national camp ahead of the Gold Coast 2018 Commonwealth Games. And according to him, she was shy. It was her first time in the camp as well. She was just sitting in the corner. And Kayode was the one that made the first move. He went to Christiana and they got talking. After the national camp, they both went their separate ways, but they kept in contact over the phone. And when Christiana was explaining the challenge she was having about getting to training to improve her game, Kayode offered to come over to Lagos to stay with him so that they can attend training sessions together. And that is where the love story started.
Yeah, my husband practices every day, 5 times in a week.
They even have a table tennis board in the center of their living room. It's a remarkable love story, and it's reflecting in the success that they're both achieving. They are the first African Paralympian couple to be competing at the Paris Olympics.
We got married in 2022. My family, they were not against the relationship, but outsiders, they were seeing this as an abomination.
Christiana told me there were lots of concerns about people around them. Disabled people in Nigeria still struggle with acceptance. They still struggle with opportunities. Less than 2% of disabled people have access to education. Less than 1% have access to public infrastructure, because most public infrastructures are designed in a way that do not cater for the concerns of people with disability. But both Christiana and Kayode have thrived together, supporting each other, being the rock for one another.
My expectation is to get to the top, to Nigeria, to my family, to my husband.
My target is to collect gold for the country and make the Africa proud as well.
Well, Nigeria is still one of the country dealing with polio in Africa. Nigeria was once a hotspot for polio, particularly the wild poliovirus, which contributed to significant disability and mortality rates in the country. In August 2020, Nigeria was officially declared free of poliovirus by the World Health Organization. But this declaration had suffered another major setback in recent times, especially in the northern part of the country, where there are lots of misconceptions about allowing their children to get vaccinated. So these are some of the reasons why this story has been making a lot of impact. After we published this story, we've gotten a lot of feedback from people living with disabilities, the organization in Nigeria, who have reached out to wish these athletes all the best. It's a remarkable story, has emotions around it, and of course, it also has the call on government to do more for disabled people in Nigeria and to create an enabling environment for them to find their purpose and to thrive at it.
Sports journalist Emmanuel Akindubua reporting from Nigeria. You can see Christiana and Kayode in action on the BBC World Service social media pages. I'm Farnak Amidi, and the Fifth Floor team was Aliche Joya and Hannah Dean. The sound engineer was Philip Lander. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
911, what is your emergency?
Most towns have a local celebrity.
Who is it that's missing?
It's my dad. He went out into the water.
An eccentric known throughout the community.
Inverness market trader Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Inverness revolved around Kim in a way.
Difference is, the local eccentric from my hometown made international headlines.
The man's son reported he disappeared in treacherous water.
Search and rescue teams thought they had yet another drowning on their hands. Or did they?
The story's not adding up.
He is completely unhinged.
It was violent. It was controlling. It was sadistic.
Dead Man Running, wherever you get your podcasts.